Hi, I hope you're all well, and I trust that you've had a very, very good week. And I'm thanking you for joining us for another live session with the Biblical Perspective. For those of you joining us for the first time, welcome and welcome again, and I'm glad that you're with us. Today we're over three platforms: my Facebook page, which is Ruthin South, Colleen Dixon's page, but eventually we'll be going purely on YouTube at the Biblical Perspective, which is our main page. And that's something I'm looking forward to. And as always, this is an interactive study, so you can ask your questions and post your comments in the link. But please be respectful when you're posting your comments and questions. We've always been good anyway, so I'm pleased about that too. Right. Sorry, for those of you joining us for the first time, my name is Ruth South, here with my colleagues, Pedro Antonius and Colleen Dixon.
Right.
The topic of this Facebook Live is playing God. But before we go into it, and I'm sure you're going to have a wonderful Facebook Live with us, because playing God is a topic that, what does it mean? But I'm sure you'll get a blessing from this. So before we go into our Facebook Live, the topic playing God, Colleen, could you please pray for us? Thank you.
Okay, let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for this opportunity that we have to study your word. Lord, I pray that this study will be a blessing to all those who watch. And I pray, Lord, that through this ministry, that lives will be transformed and that men will be drawn to you. I ask these things in your name. Amen.
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 Okay, thank
So,
you, Ruth.
playing God, you're welcome. I'm looking forward to this, Colleen and Pedro. Looking
Yes,
very
I
forward
am
to
as
it.
well. So, as Ruth has already said, we're trying to move towards just having our lives on the YouTube channel because we've had some feedback that YouTube is more accessible to people than Facebook. So we are taking comments and questions on the Facebook page, but we hope to mainly take our comments and our questions on the Biblical Perspective on YouTube. So if you do want to comment and to also ask questions, we'd encourage you to use the Biblical Perspective on the YouTube channel. So that's enough of that. Going back to this week's study. So we're studying playing God, and we're again continuing on our quarter of studies on the book of Isaiah. So for those of you who have watched the YouTube video that relates to this particular study six, you'll know that we've already discussed certain elements of the book of Isaiah. Particularly in Isaiah 13 and Isaiah 14. And I want us to have a look at Isaiah 13 and some elements of 14 again today on this live. So I wanted to, first of all, Pedro, look at Isaiah 13 and verse 1. And it says, I'm reading from the King James Version. And it says, "The burden of Babylon, which Isaiah, the son of Amos, did see." And we then go on to see that basically in Isaiah 10, God had already prophesied about the defeat of the Assyrians. Now, from Isaiah 13, we see different nations being judged. But the first nation that we see talked about is actually Babylon. And we see that in Isaiah 13, where it talks about Babylon. And we spoke about Babylon as well briefly when we did the YouTube video for this particular lesson, for this particular study. But I wanted to have a look at this whole idea of Babylon from a more contemporary standpoint. And the first question that I wanted to ask and for us to really discuss is to think about how contemporary the issue of the King of Babylon that we actually read more about in Isaiah, it is to us.
So you're right by introducing the issue. Your question is about how contemporary is the issue of the king of Babylon. But you were right in introducing Babylon itself first. And I'd like to say that the issue is past. The issue of the king of Babylon is past, it is present, and it is also future. So the question, I guess, would be, how can it be past, present, and future? Well, this is what I would like to look into with you. But first, if we could just look at the text in chapter 13, verse 19. And while you're looking for the text, I'd like to say that when we want to apply, this is general rules. We want to apply a word of prophecy. We want to apply a word from the Bible. We want to put it in our own context and see the value of it in our lives. We first and foremost need to clearly identify the text in its own historical context with everything that goes with it.
Yes.
Misunderstanding the text in its own historical context will definitely lead to a misapplication of it. So we don't want to do that. Therefore, I invite you to read for me from chapter 13, verse 19. Your question is, how contemporary is the issue of the king of Babylon? So,
Yes, okay.
verse 19 of verse 13.
So Isaiah 19, no, Isaiah 13, verse 19 says, "And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees, excellency shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah."
Yeah, so you read verse 1 at the beginning, just to remind us that this chapter is actually dealing with the nation in its glory historically. Now, people, historians will tell you, just not just in the Bible, how particularly beautiful and powerful was that nation, that kingdom. Until today, we have lots of fields, many fields in science that have been affected by what was going on in that kingdom.
Yes.
Just think of astronomy. Or, for instance, the stars,
Yes.
the sky. We waited until in the West, until we were probably in the 15th, 15th, 16th century to start talking about things that these people had been talking about every day.
Yes.
The division of time, for instance, is based on the Babylonian system of 60, 60 seconds, 60 minutes, and so on. So, this is just part of the glory and the excellency of this kingdom as a kingdom. But in this text here, we hear about something that God is going to do to this kingdom.
That's
He
right.
somehow compares this kingdom to two other places we infamously learned about in the Bible, Sodom and Gomorrah, who were destroyed
Yeah.
by God. So we hear that God is going to do the same, but the terms that he uses when he's telling about what's going to happen is the glory and the excellency. Are you with me?
Yes. Yeah.
The is going to lay this in the dust, the glory and the excellency. That's the background. We're talking about how contemporary the issue of the king of Babylon is. Now, when we move from chapter 13 and go to chapter 14, as you rightly said, we hear about the king. This time you can look at verses 1 to 3 in chapter 14 for me, please. We're just putting the question into the historical context so that we can answer it.
Yeah. Okay, so Isaiah 14, 1 to 3, and it says,
yes, please.
For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob and will yet choose Israel and set them in their own land, and the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob, and the people shall take them and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Lord for the servants and handmaids, and they shall take them captives whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. And in verse 3 says, and it shall come to pass in the day that the Lord shall give thee rest from thy sorrow and from thy fear and from the hard bondage wherein thou wast made to serve.
What I want you to notice here is three characters, two places, one God. And the two places, one is called the land of Babylon, the land of the Chaldees, and the other one is called the land of the Lord, identifying Israel as the land of the Lord. Now, what Isaiah is saying here is prophetic in nature at the time he is saying it. That means he is talking about the return of the children of Israel from Babylon when they haven't gone there.
Yeah. That's right.
And they will only go there more than a century after. So
yes,
as far as Israel is concerned, as far as Isaiah is concerned, this is in the future. Now, the text says that they will take captives, their captors, which is a reversal of a situation.
That's right. Yes, it is. Yeah.
So at some point, this became the present reality of the people of Israel, because we know from when Nebuchadnezzar became king, 605, he took Daniel, for instance, into captivity. And then in 587, he took some more and destroyed the land and the temple in Jerusalem. But in 539, God brought Israel back to their own land, which he called the land of the Lord. Yeah?
Yeah.
So that's past. As far as we're concerned, that's past. That's history. So it was future, it became present, now it's past. Now, what we are looking at is the issue of the king of Babylon.
Yes.
And I'd like you now to just read verse 4 for me, please.
Is that 14:4?
14:4, please.
Okay, and it says that thou shalt take up this proverb this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how thou the oppressor seest, the golden city seest.
God put an end, said in verse 19 of chapter 13, he is going to put an end to the kingdom. Why does he feel he needs now to talk about the king himself? Why is it that this king is promoted to the circles of people to whom God has to speak directly to by proclaiming upon him an oracle? Well, several reasons. We're looking at the question of how contemporary is the issue of the king of Babylon. All right? I want you to go to verse 16 of this same chapter for me now, please.
Do you have that, Ruth?
Yeah, so is it 14, 16?
Yes, please.
Right. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake the kingdoms? Is this the man?
Okay. We're going to be very practical this afternoon. This text has different ways of being looked at.
Okay.
And there are two main perspectives. Usually, when we look at it, we see the higher being that is paralleled with this king of Babylon. But this afternoon, according to the text that you've just read, and from the biblical perspective, the historical context, I'd like to submit to you the perspective of looking at this king as a real man.
Mm-hmm.
All right? A real man to whom God is speaking his mind. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So we will leave the other aspect on one side and concentrate on the human aspect of this narrative concerning the king, trying to answer the question as to how contemporary is the issue of the king of Babylon. Now, we need to define what the issue is, don't we?
Right. Yes, we do.
That's why, now understanding that this is a man.
Yeah.
He is the king. He is in charge of the policies of the kingdom. He governs this kingdom. What he says goes.
Mm-hmm.
With me?
Yeah.
So God has a little talk with him. Now, what is the issue of this man? I want you to look at verses 11 to 17 now, please.
Okay. Colleen, have you got that?
Okay, 11:17.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy voils and worms is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How thou art fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning, how thou art cut down to the ground, which thou hast weakened the nations. For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation, in the in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the side of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, Is this the man that thou the earth, that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of the prisoners, of his prisoners, sorry.
So in order to understand clearly how contemporary this issue is, again, I come back to the point that we need to look at the text from its historical context. And the first thing we need to recognize is we are talking here about a real man, a real king, a policy maker in the kingdom. All right? Now, to whom is God speaking? I've just said it.
To a real man, the king, the policymaker.
He's speaking to the policymaker of that kingdom. He's speaking to the king of that kingdom. Now, what's the link between God? Did Isaiah send this letter to the king? What happened? Did he have to read it because God is speaking about him? The message is for him. So did Isaiah send the message to him? Remember, this is 100 plus years before Babylon came.
Well, he couldn't, because it would have been born, it wouldn't have been born. So he was speaking a prophetic message to the people about a king that was to come to them and to do what God said that he would do.
Okay, this is one aspect of things that we need to keep in mind.
Yeah.
What Isaiah is saying right here is not something that is exclusive to Israel. In fact, historically, all the kings, what you would call pagan kings, like the king of Babylon, kings of other nations surrounding Israel, they would have recognized this text because it had been floating around before Isaiah.
Yeah.
They had a story going around where one particular God, in fact, they had several of them, one particular God was planning to take over the place of another God because he wasn't satisfied with his own position. He wanted a different one. So the king of Babylon knew about this because this was a widespread story amongst the nations around. And God, in his wisdom, is using it so that this king who is not yet in power, when he comes into power, he may the God of Israel has already spoken about him.
About him,
about
absolutely.
What he is going to do to him. Are you with me?
Yes.
So if that issue existed, the issue of setting oneself above others, wanting to take over and so on, if that preceded the king of Babylon to whom it is addressed right now, this means that this is an issue that goes beyond the present protagonists. But we will build on that. What is his very problem? In verse 11, can you read again verse 11 for me, please?
Do you have that, Ruth?
Yeah, it says, thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of the vials, the worm is spread under the tree, and the worms cover thee.
Okay, so we're looking at his problem. What is God reproaching him?
For his pride, his pomp, assuming that he's got pomp. That he's actually God himself, yeah.
Okay, you remember this word that is used there, it's the same word that is used in the first text you read, which was in Isaiah 13, verse 19. Do you remember what the problem of Babylon was?
Yes. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldeans' excellency, shall be when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah.
Okay, let's think about something here. The same word that is translated excellency in this text is the same word that is used for the king of Babylon in verse 11.
Yeah.
So why is it that we have put it pride rather than exaltation, excellency, majesty? Why? Because it's the same word.
That's right.
We're looking at how contemporary is the issue of the king of Babylon in Isaiah 14, and we're trying to define now what his real problem is.
Okay.
And his real problem, according to the text, is his excellency, his majesty, his exaltation, self-exaltation. I'm proud of myself kind of thing. Because I'm the policymaker, because I'm the king, because I'm over all these things.
Okay.
We'll talk about how contemporary the issue of the king is as a real man. Now, if you look at verse 13 and 14, can you read that again for me, please?
Yeah, so 13 says, Isaiah 14, 13 says, for thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High.
You remember I told you that that story was going around. With the, you find exactly the same words. I will do this, I will do that, I will do this in the ancient Near Eastern tradition of the one of the gods called Anzu, who wanted to take the place of the chief god, who was Enlil. And he was saying, I will do this, I will do this, I will do that. The exact same pattern that we see here. So everybody would have understood what's going on here, what God is telling the king of Babylon. But we're looking at what his problem was, and we notice. Now, keep in mind that this story is going around a long time before.
Okay.
What we see is he is very high-minded, okay? He is very ambitious. He is power-driven. Can you see that?
Yes.
He is power-driven. He is ambitious. He is a thirsty political animal. Yeah? We're looking at how contemporary is the issue of the king of Babylon.
Yes.
From Isaiah 14. So he wants to climb.
Mm-hmm.
He has defined his realm as the celestial area. He wants to climb to the top. He wants to climb to the top of the astral ladder.
I was going to say that. I was going to say the same thing. Yeah.
We're looking at how contemporary is the issue of the king. And we're seeing that the issue of the king is he is so good. He is so ambitious. He is so high-minded. He's got, he's power-driven. And he's good at what he's doing.
Absolutely.
Yet God finds a problem with that.
With him, yeah.
So is that good to be good? Or is it bad to be good? Is it good to be ambitious or bad to be high-minded? Is it good to be power-driven, to have a political ambition, to want to climb to the top of the ladder?
No, it's not bad. Why you are doing that. No, it sounds great, but your motive behind it, that's what's driving you, and it's a wrong motive. You mentioned to be above the celestial planes. That is only an area reserved for God. God says, heaven is my home and the earth is my footstool. But this king wanted to be above the King of Kings, so to speak. So that's what makes it bad.
I want you to remember that this is a real king, a real man, and his problem is real. And I agree with what you're saying, but let's have an insight. The text is actually not letting us wonder. If you look at verse 13,
okay,
look at the strategy, and maybe we will have an insight into what the problem is. Look at the strategy.
Yeah.
You've read it already. Let me just say it to you. You notice in the text. You notice in the text that, well, you want to read it again.
Yeah, for thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into the heaven.
Okay.
I will exalt my.
Okay. You've read it. He is not coming out with it. His strategy, he's not coming out with it. Where does it happen?
In his mind.
In his heart.
In his mind.
In his mind.
In his mind.
Mind. Yeah.
So you see something. But there is something else that is not displayed.
That's right.
There is something in the heart, in the mind. He is thinking it.
Absolutely. Thinking it. Yes.
But I want you to notice who speaks it.
Yeah.
Because he's not saying it.
It appears as though what was in his mind is now being vocalized, and only God can read the intent of the heart.
Who vocalizes it?
Isaiah.
Remember verse 4 says, take a proverb, take an oracle. Who is speaking?
God.
All right.
God.
This is the first issue. This is the first issue. It is God who is speaking it.
That's
and
right.
God is seeing within the heart and the mind of this man.
That's right.
There are plans. that are not in line with his will.
God, that's right.
How contemporary is the issue of the king of Babylon? We need to pause here and understand. We can't hide anything from God.
That's right.
This is past, this is present, this is future. If within our hearts we are planning to do certain things, which we will see in the text as we go, that are not necessarily in line with the will of God, we are not surprising anybody who matters.
That's right.
We need to understand, if God took the time to reveal that more than 100 years before, it's because it matters to God what is going on in our minds and in our hearts, and he does not want anything in there that is not according to his will.
To his will, absolutely.
This is a principle that is past, present, and future. But let's move on with this king. We're still looking at his issues. Now, in verse 12, what does he say? We've read it. What he is actually expressing in his heart is dissatisfaction with his position.
Absolutely.
Now, I want you to remember that this is not anybody in the street. This is the king of Babylon.
That's right. That's right.
This is the policymaker.
Yeah.
This is the one who speaks a word and everybody runs.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, he is dissatisfied with his position. He wants
more. That's right.
But the problem so far, you can tell me that's not much of a problem. You can want more in your career. You can want more. But the problem is,
why?
He is about to put others down so that he can elevate himself. Because in verse 12, he says, remember, he is a shining star. The word Lucifer that you have there in the original language, it simply means the shining one. And in astronomy, scholars believe that this is the Venus planet, which is a star in their minds. But whatever it is, it is a real star that shines, but what he wants is to outshine everybody else. We're looking at how contemporary is the issue of the king of Babylon. Because he wants to outshine everybody, all the other stars, he has to trample on their heads.
Yeah.
He has to pull them down.
Down.
And this is what he is thinking in his mind. He's not saying it. Which means, how is he going to go around putting them down? That's why I want you to look at that story as the story of a man. Because we read in verse 16, this is a man. And there is something about this man that God does not quite agree with.
Absolutely.
The issue, what is it? First of all, He is one of the highest, but he is dissatisfied. He's not speaking it, but he's sneaking it.
I like that.
He's not going to go around it in an open way. He's going to pull the strings. He's going to do it the snake way. Are you with me?
Say that again. He's not speaking it, but say that again. He's not. I like that.
He's not speaking it. He's not speaking it. He's sneaking it.
Yeah. I like that.
Now, the question is, how is he going to go around it, as we've already said? Now, there is something else in the text that we tend to jump to Lucifer. I said that the word Lucifer comes from the Vulgate Latin translation of the word shining one. So the word Lucifer does not etymologically refer to the devil. We take it as such,
okay,
as a parallel. You with me?
Yeah.
But it only means the shining one.
Okay,
like a shining star, the sun of the morning, the star that brings the day on, the morning star. All right? So this is a real man who really stands in a high position, but he is dissatisfied with his position, and he will do everything according to what is in his heart to reach that position. Now,
yeah,
in that same verse, we tend to say he wants to be above God. When we talk about the application of this narrative to the devil, yes, we can say that. But when we talk about the man in that story, look, he is not saying he wants to be above the Most High. He says he wants to be like the Most High. What does that mean? He wants the same sort of authority.
Power. Yeah.
He knows he's not the Most High. By the way, to really nail it, the word Most High here is the Canaanite. You will find this in Genesis 14, when Abraham meets Melchizedek, the priest of the Most High. It's the Canaanite name for the chief god. So you can see that story is well known by all people around Israel,
yeah,
and they recognize themselves in it. And God has no problem using it to talk to this king, because that's the language he will understand. And that's the language we understand too. You know
Lucifer.
Why? Because this is a concept. The Lucifer character is a concept. He is not saying, I want to replace the Most High. None of us wants to replace God, because we know we're not stupid. We know we can't replace God. But we can play God. We can plan to receive as much attention as God should receive. We can plan to make people depend on us as much as they should depend on God. Are you with me?
Yeah.
We may want to receive the same honor, the same glory as God should alone receive.
Yeah.
And this attitude is a concept which we find in almost, I'm answering the question now, how contemporary this issue is. This is a concept that you find in almost every field of today's life. You find it in technology. You find it in business. You find it in entertainment. You find it in many fields of science. You find it almost everywhere where you have people wanting to outshine other people. You find it in religion, where people are placed equal to God because of how they are able to outshine others.
Yeah.
Are you
sports? Everything.
It's a concept that is well alive and kicking today.
Today. Yes.
The concept of the today. Shining one.
Wow. Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
But there is a problem with that. There is a problem with this concept. What is it?
Yeah. There's only one
God. I want you to read again quickly. I want you to read again quickly verses 12, 15, and 19 of the same chapter.
Twelve says, how art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down from the ground, which didst weaken the nations? And 15 says, yet thou shalt be brought down to hell and to the sides of the pit. And was it 19?
Yes.
Yeah.
19 says, but thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch, and as the remnant of those that are slain, thrust through with a sword and cut down to the stone of the pit, as a carcass trodden underfoot.
In all these verses, I'm going to go fast. In all these verses, the point being made is you are only human.
That's right.
You are only mortal.
That's right.
How contemporary this issue is, God is telling us to learn our mortality, to learn about our humanness. We cannot place ourselves or any other person in the place that is equal, not above God, equal to God. You will notice he never came from heaven. He came from earth and wanted to ascend to heaven.
Yeah.
This Lucifer came from earth. This shining one came from earth. This man came from earth. He wasn't in heaven. He came from earth and he said, I will ascend.
That's right.
All right? But God said, this place does not belong to you in the mindset that you have.
That's right.
Therefore, you need to be cast down.
Out.
In the grave. And the text hell here is grave to symbolize death.
That's
you
right.
are only human. Let me spell it out clearly now. How contemporary is this issue? We need to recognize that there is only one God in this universe. And that is the first statement that you ever find in the Bible, in the beginning. In
the beginning, God.
God created the heavens and the earth. We tend to think that that statement is what you call a cosmogonical argument, telling you about the origin only. Yes, it is. We tend to think that it's a cosmological argument. That is, God created the cosmos. Yes, this is true. But it's also an authority statement to say, God has one place, human beings and other creatures are under him. And today, there is such a lack of that understanding of us. We place ourselves on equal footing with God. We may not do it intentionally, but whether it is intentional or not, it doesn't go with God, and it cannot be tolerated. We have to descend to the place to where we belong, which is the place of a creature. However, I want to say in the same vein, when you read the text of Genesis, where you have the creator who is above everything, you also have the creation of man, whom God himself puts over everything.
Dominion.
So God doesn't have a problem with people reaching high. But he has a problem with people who cannot stay where he put them. Now, you may think that, what if God puts you in a room in a bad place when you can't appreciate? Never. Why? Because when God created man, he gave man everything he himself had except divinity. He gave man freedom. He gave man dominion. Gave man his own image. But he did not transfer to man his divinity. This is the problem of the king. And this problem is the concept that really rules our lives today. The high-mindedness, the thirst for power, the power-driven attitude, the complete lack of consideration for the other stars, the other people. We want to be above them. This is the issue of the king, and God is not having it. I want you to read a last text. If you go to, not the last, two last one, verses 21 to 23 of the same chapter, please.
Have you got that, Ruth?
Yeah, is that 14, 21 to 23?
And somebody else can look for 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 to 5. And we will finish with that.
So Isaiah 14, 21 to 23.
Yes.
Prepare slaughter for his children, for iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise, nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with cities. I also make it a possession for the bittern and pools of water, and I will sweep it with the besom of destruction, saith the Lord of hosts.
Whose children is it spoken about here? The children of the king.
Yeah.
This king has children.
That's right.
The education system cares for children, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
What are you taught? Power driven? Ambition? Yeah. High-mindedness?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I'm telling you, if you are a child of this concept, God is saying it will all end up in ruin. And you may think that God is attacking you. No, this is a salvation message. Mm. By talking to the king before he was ever on the throne, he was extending mercy to him so that
Absolutely. He
may not go in that direction. Are you with mm-hmm. me?
Yes.
And he's saying, by using the word children, he is saying, anybody who follows after this concept will be subject to the same fate. And I don't want that to happen to you. Now, the last text, unfortunately, this is what the Bible says. And you ask me, how contemporary is the issue of the king? 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 to 5. Please.
2 Timothy 3, 1 to 5. This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come, for men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heedy, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away.
To five, that's all. Now,
wow.
You asked me, how contemporary is the issue of the king of Babylon? Do you have your answer?
Yes.
You will find Excellent. The same characteristics, that the king had in 14. These are the ones that characterize the people at the end of time. But here mm-hmm. is the word of turn away from
them. That's right. Right.
I'm done.
We're gonna leave it there. That was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Because you know we have text, right? We have a concept of them, and it's not always what it seems when it's studied in its historical context. We've seen here it's a real man that has all these delusions of grandeur. Is a king, a policymaker, and wanted to be like the Most High. And God said, no, your children will be the same. From such turn away, because I have no place in my world, in my kingdom. Brilliant. As always, thank you very much, Colleen and Pedro. And remember, without this, I'd never can find the right way. we would never understand the concept of Lucifer, which means star. It just means more than what we thought it meant. We need to study this wonderful book, The Best Instruction Before Leaving Earth. And I don't say that lightly, because we don't want to fall in the category of those in 2 Timothy 3, verse 5. And I would implore you, viewers, to go back and read chapter 14 of Isaiah 1 to 17, and to read 2 Timothy 3, 1 to 15, if you don't want the fate of the king and his children. God is about salvation. So thank you very much. And please press the notification button. Don't forget to subscribe and share this video if you've enjoyed it. You know that we're on The Biblical Perspective every week at 3 o'clock. As always, stay safe, stay blessed, and see you next week at 3 p.m., God willing. Take care.